Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, everybody. This is one part of the EAN podcasts on the topic of MS, carefully chosen topics. And this one is, I think, particularly interesting because it's featuring the article of the month. And this has been picked out by Dr. Antonia Lefter. I will introduce her in a minute. My name is Christian Enzinger. I'm a neurologist and head of the Department of General Neurology in Graz, Austria, also head of the MS outpatient clinic, and together with Professor Massimo Filippi, co-chair of the MS panel within the EAN. So I think one important thing is, if you do clinical work, as Dr. Lefter is doing, to keep up to date with scientific papers and progress in the field. And for this, obviously, you have to be aware of what is an interesting paper and where the relevance comes. Dr. Antonia Lefter, she is a general neurologist covering various diseases. She obtained her training in Bucharest, but also had an EAN clinical fellowship on MS and related disorders in Lille, in France. She took part in many EAN spring and autumn schools. And what I think is particularly important, she is the representative of the EAN in the resident and research fellow section within the scientific panel on MS. And she's very active in here. And thanks for that, Antonia. I will keep away your academic degree for a moment, because you chose an article with the title, How Patients with Multiple Sclerosis Acquire Disability, with the first author, Professor Fred Lublin, published in Brain this year in February, so quite hot and, as you will tell us in a minute, relevant. And Antonia, your publication list is quite impressive, and I see there's a lot of clear case descriptions. And I stumbled across one when we had a patient with acute onset of amnesia just recently due to bilateral fornix infarction. You published on that also. So I think it's very important to bring together science and clinical work. And this is bringing me to the first question, Antonia. What was the reason for choosing this article?
Well, hello, Professor Enzinger. First of all, thank you for that kind introduction. First of all, I chose the article because I think it is very important to acknowledge the existence of progression independent of relapse activity. And awareness of this might not be as increased as it should be. And then secondly, I think that the relevance of the data presented here is undisputable, since it is a large data set from the Novartis Oxford Multiple Sclerosis data pool, comprising approximately 35,000 patients spanning all MS phenotypes with up to 15 years of follow-up, with approximately 200,000 DDSS transitions, and also with the inclusion of randomized placebo-controlled trials across all stages of MS. So these are the reasons why I thought it was important to present the data.
Yeah, because there's been papers out in smaller cohorts previously suggesting this concept, of course, but this aggregated and very comprehensive analysis is quite new and probably also something to give us new thoughts about the concept. But for our audience, could you just define what PIRA means?
So PIRA, progression independent of relapse activity, is defined as a 3 or 6 month confirmed disability worsening event, either in the absence of a previous relapse or with an onset more than 90 days from the start date of the last reported relapse. And now confirmed disability worsening is based on EDSS assessment. It is defined by an increase in EDSS of at least 1.5 points for a baseline EDSS of 0, at least 1 point for an EDSS between 1 and 5, and 0.5 points for a baseline EDSS of at least 5.5 5.5 points. Now, this had to be confirmed in another EDSS assessment performed at least 3 or 6 months from the onset of worsening. And it also had to be confirmed in sustained in intermediate evaluations if there had been any. Furthermore, no relapse should have occurred within 30 days before and after the EDSS confirmation. In case of a relapse with incomplete recovery, the reference EDSS value would be reset over 90 days from the relapse onset. And this is important because some progression may be masked sometimes by episodes of acute neurological symptoms, and therefore gradual worsening might be incorrectly attributed to a relapse. Now, the authors used a more stringent definition of PIRA as opposed to other studies, which used a composite of EDSS with hand coordination through the 9-hole peg test and walking ability through the timed 25-foot walk test.
Yeah, is this similar to the term of subclinical disease activity, or is it different from that? And how could we use this quite complicated criteria in clinical practice? But we could also leave this for the end of the discussion. But reading the paper, did you come across also suggestions how we could, by the results, change our the way we're managing this disease?
So first of all, the authors address the contribution of each of them, of relapse-associated worsening and progression independent of relapse activity to disability accrual in multiple sclerosis. They confirm that relapses contribute significantly to disability worsening. However, relapse-associated worsening was only the dominant driver of disability worsening for the pediatric population of MS. In relapsing-remitting multiple sclerosis, they show that up to 50% of the disability accumulation was not associated with overt relapses. In fact, sustained PIRA events occurred with a similar or a higher frequency to relapse-associated events in adult patients with relapsing-remitting MS. And also, interestingly, they show that PIRA occurs early in the disease and becomes a dominant driver of disability accumulation as the disease progresses. And so, understandably, in secondary progressive and primary progressive MS, PIRA is a dominant driver of disability accrual. Now, secondly, they found that the main risk factors for further disability accumulation were pre-existing disability and older age. For example, following a year with relapses with an annualized relapse rate of 1, the risk of an all-cause disability worsening increased by 30 to 50%. And additionally, other risk factors for incomplete recovery from a relapse were male sex and bladder and bowel involvement. Moreover, they looked at time to reach milestone EDSS levels and found that in placebo-treated patients with relapsing-remitting MS and minimal disability, that is a EDSS of 1, it took approximately 9 years to reach EDSS 4 and 18.5 years to reach EDSS 6. Now, relapsing-remitting multiple sclerosis patients who worsened exclusively due to relapses had a similar length of time to reach EDSS levels as those who only had PIRA events. And the fastest EDSS transitions were found in patients with both PIRA and superimposed relapses. Now, regarding the impact of treatment to milestone disability, they found that disease-modifying therapies can delay the transition from EDSS 1 to 4 by approximately 3.5 years and from EDSS 4 to 6 by approximately 1.4 years, which is in line with the known fact that the benefit of treatment is highest in the early stages of the disease.
Antonia, now that you've presented this interesting analysis, I think the big question stands how we could translate this into clinical practice, because there's an indication in there that we need to do better in terms of capturing PIRA, progression independent of relapses. And you mentioned quite stringent criteria. So we need to see our patients at regular intervals, do a proper neurological exam, but probably there are other factors as well. So what are your personal thoughts on recognizing PIRA, even in early stages of MS? So the first thing, would you be thinking of it? But then what do we need as in terms of assessment and measurement?
I think that, first of all, as you've very well mentioned, it is very important to consider it. First of all, we need to recognize it and we have to pay attention for it. Every time we examine the patient on repeated reevaluations, we must bear in mind, especially when we are faced with a disease worsening that cannot be traced to a relapse or otherwise explained through comorbidities of the patient or anything else. And even in the early stage of relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, not just for patients with progressive disease, diagnosed with progressive disease. And then, of course, there is the issue of dealing with PIRA, which is still a problem that we are facing in daily practice. And perhaps regarding this, there might be a need to address it further with other future studies. What do you think about this, Professor?
Yeah, is there any role that you could envision in terms of biomarkers, adding additional information such as serum neurofilament, for instance, or repeated MRI exams, or even smart devices, for instance, we are wearing smartphones all the time. What are your thoughts on that? Or should we focus on a standardized clinical assessment at regular intervals?
I think that there should be an integrated both clinical and paraclinical assessment, of course. I stress the clinical aspect because we deal with it on a daily basis, but of course the other imaging and biological markers are also very important. As for the neurofilaments, I'm not sure how easy it would be to assess them on a regular basis, but of course that is very sensible. Of course, through imaging evaluations performed according to the scheduled program.
Thank you. And again, thank you for bringing to our attention this important paper, because I also think one conclusion is that we have to be aware that this is happening in early stages of disease, and there is an indication in there that more efficacious treatment might have highest effects in the earliest stages of MS. And this is, I think, a very plausible story. Thank you again. One thing that would intrigue me to learn from you and also probably to stimulate neurologists to keep within this field of MS and neuroimmunological disorders. What fascinates you in MS treatment and research? What are key findings? What are highlight findings where you just say, well, this was something I really had an eye opener and was really intrigued and feeling at ease with my decision to stay within this field and to invest my time?
Yes, thank you very much for that question. First of all, I'm just astounded by how rapidly everything has happened over the course of a few years, for instance, in terms of treatments. That is generally astounding, and the trend is most likely to continue, and no doubt in a few years we'll have other newer molecules. And I really think that the goal to achieve a personalized, individually tailored therapeutic approach to our patients is in fact feasible, and hopefully not in a very distant future. And perhaps it might entail a combination of therapies. And as for an area of research that I find very interesting and will probably help to make this possible, it involves artificial intelligence. I think that it has a great potential to deliver predictive models, for example, of clinical course, disease, progression of disease, and thus to help us better tailor our decisions. Of course, this wouldn't substitute the clinical assessment, the need for it to constantly reevaluate our patients and to ask for their core complaints. but it would help us not to miss anything, such as early signs of disease progression.
Thank you again, Dr. Lefter from Bucharest, Romania. I think this is really a European challenge to keep up with the progress we have scientifically and to digest this and also to implement this for the sake of well-being of our patients. And I think you've done an excellent job in just highlighting this within this podcast. So thank you again for all the work you do for the EAN. I hope people will find this infectious in terms of just increasing their activity levels as well. And I definitely found it very stimulating. Thank you for being with us. And I would also like to highlight that a nicely fitting topic to this, what we just had, would be the sequel of this podcast series on real-world data in MS. What can they tell us about management of this disease? And this will be covered by Professor Magyari from Copenhagen. So we have a really nice story. Having said that, thank you again for your activities and goodbye, and hope you will listen also to the remaining episodes.
Thank you very much, Professor Renzinger. It's been an honor. And thank you everyone for listening.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EANcast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.